Hey guys, welcome to the Working Class Bowhunter Podcast. The podcast is presented by Elite Archery. We've been shooting Elite for a long time, proudly made in America, if that matters to you. It should.
USA.
We challenge you to take the shootability challenge with Elite. Go to a local dealer, find a dealer that carries Elite, and just give one a try. You might love it. We love them. And
that's all we ask.
We think you'd enjoy it too. So check out elitearchery.com. Use code WCB there. Pretty easy. The podcast is also brought to you by Big Tine. And Big Tine, if you live in a state that offers supplemental feed, they have that. And they have food plot seeds. So something for everyone. Use code WCB2021 to save yourself some coin on some good stuff for your deer.
Cha-ching.
Or you're going to like it.
Or whatever animal
might eat.
I guarantee it. That's all.
You're going to like the way your buck looks. I guarantee it.
I see what you're doing.
Yeah, see like that?
The podcast is also brought to you by Loophold Optics. Very proud of that partnership. We love Loophold, based out of Beaverton, Oregon.
That's right.
Great people, great products, from rangefinders to binos to spotting scopes for us. We don't really use the rifle scopes because we're not into gun hunting as much, but they make great scopes too. Mm-hmm. Performance eyewear, they got it all. We think you'll like it. Loophold Optics, check them out. Tell them that we sent you. That helps out. Mm-hmm. The Midwest Takeover is what we're calling it. Loophold is going to be more and more involved in the whitetail game as
everywhere.
As we work together. So yeah. Give them a shot before you just go buy whatever is at your big box store. You know, go out and play with the Loophold. Also, Spy Point cameras. From a Cell Link, which is a great entry way to get into some spy points, to the Link Micros. They really have a lineup for everybody at a good price.
Great price.
And you can be an insider club on there. You get different pricing on your plans and entered into giveaways and all sorts of good stuff like that. If you're going to buy a cell cam, just check them out.
We think they have like a free plan for 100 pictures a month.
Which is sweet during the summer.
Yep.
Sweet during the summer or in a spot where you don't get a ton of traffic.
Yeah.
So, and you get better pricing with the Insiders Club, or you can kind of just price out what works for you, or do the free plan. Why not? Rogue Ridge e-bikes, the entry and exit strategy for a lot of people come in and out of the deer woods, and even probably the western woods, whatever they're hunting. E-bikes are changing the way. No scent trail, silent, and it's fun.
Yep.
I think people just forget it's fun.
Hell, you can even ride over to your buddy's house and drink a few beers, you know?
I mean, maybe you've done it.
No.
I'd never do that.
No.
The podcast also brought to you by Scent Crusher. Been working with Scent Crusher for a long time. I know, you know, you can't always go scent free no matter what, but it helps to go in as scent free as possible. Mm-hmm. Always play the wind, but why not take every precaution that you can, especially if you're hunting mature whitetails. You're dumb not to try it.
Go the extra mile.
Yeah, go the extra mile. From the gear bag, the roller bag, everything. Love our Scent Crusher stuff. Check them out, scentcrusher.com. And then that all being said, with another one of our partners that kind of ties into all our other partners is Old Barn Taxidermy.
Yep.
You know, you spend your hard-earned money on some of these products that we believe in, people behind the product that believe in us in order to partner with us. Don't go cheap on your taxidermy. Two things I don't cheap on, tattoos and taxidermy. It's pretty good.
Right. Boom.
And that's it. Everything else, maybe I'm cheap out, but
I'm a cheap ass.
I'm over it. I pay for convenience anytime I can.
Like I'm shopping at Harbor Freight, you know?
Well, I mean, I'm a Pittsburgh man, so what's up?
That's right.
And also Novix tree stands. We have a code for them, Working Class 21, for 15% off, and novixoutdoors.com. You can get into an American made tree stand for really reasonably priced, and you can get into one for under bear stand with offset bracket 9.2 pounds. That's pretty kick-ass.
That is kick-ass.
That's awesome. Pretty kick-ass. And what's great about them, they are local to us.
Mm-hmm.
So that's even better. Made in USA. They're proud of that, and we're proud to be partnered with them.
That's
pretty
right.
Awesome. Back in the tree stand game. So check them out. That's code Working Class 21. I always go WCB like in my head. Working Class 21 for 15% off.
Mm-hmm.
Tell them we sent you.
Hey.
Thank you for tuning into the podcast, and we hope you enjoy it. We got through them, so you can get to the show. Thanks for being here.
I'm Chase Rolson with Rubline Marketing.
This is Jeff Lindsay.
This is Michael Pitt.
Hey, everybody, it's John Dudley from Knock On TV.
Hey, guys, this is Jared Scheffler from Whitetail Adrenaline.
Hi, I'm Taylor Drury from Drury Outdoors.
Hey, this is Nick Munt from Bone Collector.
Hey, this is Melissa Bachman.
Working Class Bow Hunter.
Working Class Bow Hunter.
Working Class Bow Hunter Podcast.
Working Class Bow Hunter Podcast.
Working Class Bow Hunter.
Working Class Bow Hunter.
Working Class Bow Hunter.
You're listening to the Working Class Bow Hunter. That's right. This is a podcast for Billy Joe Lunchbucket, the working man, just like me and you. My name's Travis T. Bone Turner from The Bone Collector. Thank you for tuning in.
Nobody pushes the envelope like Working Class Bow Hunter.
It's really, really not that good.
Welcome to the Working Class Bowhunter, episode 470. Or let me redo that over. You're turning into Working Class Bowhunter podcast. It's the morning show, The Rock. We are recording in the morning. It's like...
God, we haven't done one of these in a hot minute.
What time is it? It's like 9:45 a.m. So for us, that's a really early show.
Yeah.
Because normally it's like a little later. So anyway, good to see you guys bright and early for us.
Mm-hmm.
We have some special guests in studio all the way from the east. The Outdoor Drive podcast fellas are in the house. What's up, guys?
What's up, man? Thanks What's for having happening? Us, buddy.
Introduce you guys yourself so people get to know your sweet, sweet voices.
Oh, geez. That's not a good idea. Trevor Berwick. They call me East Coast Trev. I'm from Connecticut. That's about, 18 hours from here? It sucks.
Only.
It's a tough ride.
tough gig.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I'm Stephen Clark, or just Steve, as it seems to have been termed lately. So
we call you Simply Steve.
Yeah. Simply I like Steve. It. I could go with that. At least it's got a little meaning behind it.
Yeah, I like it. Well, thank you guys for making the haul.
Dude,
thanks for having us, bro.
We talked about this like shortly after the shoot, right?
Because mm-hmm.
you guys drove all the way out here for the shoot, which is killer. It's kind of like a tradition now.
Yeah, it is.
I consider it anyway. I don't know. You guys are probably sick of it.
No.
And then I don't know how it got brought up, but I was like, we got to get you guys out here, line it up for your guys' 100th episode, yeah. which...
In studio.
Yeah, which I don't know where this will air versus when your 100th episode will air, but we're kind of killing two birds with one stone having you guys in. And we were talking before this. I'm like, you guys have been on, haven't you? And I realize you guys haven't been on the podcast yet. But we've podcast with you before, Trev,
yep.
but, you know, just we're fresh now. We're starting
new.
Starting bright.
That's that it. Was past times.
Yeah. first of all, I want to give a big shout out to you guys for being a part of the Hunter's Box Club. That was pretty cool. You guys had a pretty cool shirt in there. And,
thank you for that, man. We really appreciate it, honestly.
Yeah. I'm helping out with Hunter's Box Club. For anybody that has a company or an item they'd like to throw in the box, hit me up. I'm helping out with that. It's kind of like a win-win on the marketing side of things for a business or a small business even. So, but yeah, I was like, hey, we got to do a shirt with you guys, and you guys will kill it promoting it, and you guys did.
We appreciate it, man, because it actually came out with a really cool t-shirt and mm-hmm. kind of went across and... A lot of people actually got it, so it was actually really cool for us.
If awesome. I think that it'll already be out by the time you're listening to this. If you already signed up for the box, there's a loophole box coming, and there's some goodies in there. You're not getting BX5 Santium, 10x42s in the box because
damn it,
for $20 a month, it doesn't really add up that way. But trust me, if we could do that, we would do it. So, but anyway, like there's some good stuff that I'm working on lining up and. If you have suggestions, let me know. But talk about the Outdoor Drive podcast. Like, how long you guys been doing it? Who the hell you guys are? How you guys met? Like, give us the nitty gritty,
the background.
Oh, geez. So how it all started, honestly, was I was part of a past project. Things didn't go all that well. Steven was actually a guest on it, and we became pretty good friends. And we had actually talked about him partnering up with us and mm-hmm. becoming a co-host.
Mm-hmm.
And then kind of things kind of went south there, and I reached out to Steven and I was like, hey, Steven, things went south real quick. We got a short period of time. We need to get back up and rolling.
Mm-hmm. Well, you got to define short period of time.
It was like a week.
Oh, really? That's all
yeah,
it was?
It happened quick because the Harrisburg show was about to happen. And we're like, well, we need to release this in Harrisburg. Like, we can't just stop the content because people were there, supporting us and listening to us. Let's just do this. Let's hit it hard. Let's go.
Smart.
And so Steven was like, I'm in. So we kind of hit the drawing board and had to come up with a logo, this, that, and the other thing. And so we got all that. And then some of the people that kind of close to us, they advised us about not doing what we had come up with. And they're like, you need to do something different. So then we went back to the drawing board. Now we got 3 days to do this, right? Before we're about to head off to Harrisburg. And next thing you know, we end up coming up with the Outdoor Drive podcast. And then we ended up launching it at the Harrisburg show, what, year and a couple months ago?
Yeah,
and
it's February.
It's just kind of snowball effect from there, man. It just kind of took off. And, you know, we were kind of in the realm of the bow hunting thing before. Mm-hmm. And it just kind of pigeonholed us to where myself, I'm not only just a bow hunter.
Yeah.
Like, I'm a full outdoorsman, and Steven himself also. So It was just kind of more of a better way to go, being able to, you know, talk about fishing, hunting, camping, hiking. I mean, pretty much anything in the outdoors, not just into the bow hunting realm, you know, because I mean, the bow hunting realm for me is like what I love to do, but the fishing is what I do for a living. So it's like, I want to talk about that. Like, there's just so much out there to be talked about. And I think that there's just like a big market that we were missing.
Talk about it without people being like, this is a bow hunting podcast. We're talking about fishing. I mean, you could do whatever you want, but I know what you're saying. Right. It's a good move on your guys' part.
Well, there's bow fishing.
There's bow fishing.
Right.
Yeah. But I mean, once again, you're also limited to the bow hunting side of fishing, I guess, too. And that's where our niche is, obviously. Right. But so, yeah, I mean, can be challenging. But we turn down some podcasts because it's like, we want to talk about rifles. That's cool, but
it's not our thing, bro. It's
not our show, but which, you know, we would do one probably eventually. But yeah, I mean, smart move on your guys' part.
And it's just nice because then it keeps that content. Like, I mean, you guys probably know it's tough to keep that content throughout the off season with bow hunting, right? Mm-hmm. Or, well, it was for me anyways. You know, we live in the East and there's just so many other things to be doing.
Yeah.
And so the fishing aspect, we can go through the whole entire summer and talk about fishing and everything else, you know, and not just be into the hunting realm. Mm-hmm. And the people around us, they do that too, you know? So it's kind of cool to have a podcast like that, you know?
Yeah, definitely. Yep. Yeah, it broadens like what you can talk about. And I like, that's a good move. And, you know, props to you guys for rolling it out so hot right before a show. I mean, strike hard, strike fast. That's what you guys did. So you, a little over a year.
Yeah, we're a little bit over a year now.
And you're right at the 100 episode mark. It's awesome. Yeah. You're getting to work.
Kicking ass.
We tried to.
It's been a grind. I ain't gonna lie.
People don't understand it. Everybody wants a podcast. Until, what do you guys call it?
What's that? The coronavirus.
The coronavirus of podcasts. Yeah. Like it just birthed a lot of podcasts.
It did, man.
Which is great, but I think people realize quick, it's like, oh shit, to do this and be consistent at it.
It's a lot of work.
It's a ton of work.
I mean, we set the precedence early. The way I kind of look at it is we had 72 hours to go from nothing to ready to produce.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So we were balls to the wall from the get-go, and it's just kind of fed on since.
Yeah, it's a ton of planning and real fast. But yeah, I mean, props to you guys for committing. That's a cool thing, too, is I think, you know, hunting's our passion, but I'm pretty obsessed with podcasting the more we're into it. You know, it's like, this is our, today we're recording our fourth podcast of this week.
Yeah.
Now, that's not ideal every week because we're all busy and it's a grind and, you know, coordinating and planning and all that. But how bad do you want it?
Exactly.
You know,
the thing with podcasting is that, like, we say it all the time, like, we do it and we love it. But there's so much. It's just more of an excuse to be able to meet a lot of people and do a lot of things. Mm-hmm. Like, we just use that as an excuse, like, hey, we're going to podcast. And then we get to hang out with, like, you guys, man, to come out here and podcast. Like, that's like going on a big hunt for us. Like, it's just so cool to be around everybody in the camaraderie inside. Like, just like being in camp, man, like spending time, having drinks, bullshitting, spending time with each other. I mean, showing deer pictures because it's before season. I mean, it's so cool to us, you know, like, what else are you going
to
get that?
And the people you get to meet is just unbelievable.
Yeah. Definitely. Yeah, that is a good way to put it. It's like we figured out a way to take like that during season celebration and fun and stretch it out every week for a year. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, and then even then it's almost like our trade shows. A lot of guys in the industry, if you talk to guys, have been in it for a long time. They don't really dig trade shows. They're kind of over. They're burnt out on it a little bit, which I get kind of. But for us, we still have so much fun because that's like the ultimate hunting camp because we get to see everyone we're friends with.
That's right.
And then people that listen as like a hunting camp camaraderie weekend. You know, we're not hunting. It'd be cooler if that was possible, but it's not possible that way.
Right.
So it's the next best thing. Get to talk about it.
Well, it was like last night we got to stay in the studio here, and all throughout the night, like, I kept waking up and I'm like, we're podcasting tomorrow. Like, it was just like opening day to me.
Because I was like, up behind the first thing you said.
It's like Christmas Eve.
It's like, dude, it's like opening day. I'm like, dude, calm down.
No, but it's cool because to have the chance to be here with you guys, and you guys have kind of paved the way for a lot of us podcasters that follow behind you guys, and you guys have like kind of set that precedence for us, man. Like, me personally, man, I mean, everything over the years of, you know, talking to you guys and stuff, you guys have just like totally just made that way, and just guys I look up to are you guys, you know what I'm
saying?
So to be here and be able, you know, we're staying in the studio and waking up, and then you're like, oh, we're podcasting today. Mm-hmm. And it just kept me up. Like, the anxiety was like, oh, I get to podcast with the WCB boys, like, so badass.
That's,
you know,
cool, dude.
That's awesome.
You know, well, I mean, you guys have been awesome. Like, you know, it's not, we can't be the only podcast, and we want people to listen to other good podcasts, and I put you guys up there with other good podcasts. So it's like, you know, it's kind of like when you look at the, like, I listen to, like, Fighter and the Kid and Rogan and, like, Duncan Trussell mm-hmm. and, like, Joey D, like, that Circle of Comedian podcast. You all kind of know they're in cahoots.
Right.
You know what I mean? That's like that circle. I mean, the outdoor industry should probably have something like that, too. You know,
I totally agree. And some of the things that I say, like, we've been on other podcasts or talking to other podcasters and stuff when we had some pretty cool people that we've worked with. And I say to them all the time, like, there's so much room for a lot of other podcasters. Definitely. And we all stick together and, you know, we all help each other, talk to each other. You know, you get in kind of like your niche group. You know, like, you might release a podcast on Monday. I might release one on Tuesday. Someone else might release one on Wednesday. Like, there's plenty of room for everybody.
For sure.
You know, for all the good people. And we just kind of gather together and kind of move forward. I mean, because something that I have on our podcast about fishing is not something that they're going to learn on your
it's different. And
vice versa, you know? So it's out there, man. It's just a learning, you know, it's like having different books. You're not going to just read the same book over and over again, right? You're going to go and find another one.
Yeah. So. You don't only like one TV show, you know what I mean? But too, you know, a lot of it plays in, I guess, advice for people that are wanting to start one or are like fresh into the game of it. Like, you also have to have like your niche or something that's unique to you. Cause like we've been getting a lot of camera questions. I don't know if it's because we've been filming them. Like, we know a lot about cameras. We don't. But
so we have a guy for that. But
like, a lot of people, I think, just think they can do like, all right, we're going to take what Jury Outdoors does and we're going to make our own hunting show. It's going to be like Jury, but it's going to be us. But then they just basically copied everything structure for structure all the way through. And that doesn't go anywhere. Well, it's like, well, that's already been done. Like, you have to find kind of your niche. Like, you had to find your style or your pocket. Just like, I don't imagine it'd be like, I'm not a musician, but I can only imagine if you're like, I'm going to start writing songs. Probably takes you a little while to figure out what kind of songs you write because you fall into your style.
Yeah. Kind of every artist has their own style.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's only interesting if it's original.
That's it too, you know, or, you know, original and like be yourself and have your own twist, which I guess is being original, you know, just another way of wording it. But I think that's the big thing in being successful, you know? And like, a lot of guys regurgitate, we talk about this kind of a lot here and there, regurgitate information. Everybody tries to be the expert and then regurgitate information they don't actually know, that they heard Ross say it about killing a 200 incher. And then I'm in here like, I killed a 200 incher and trying to talk about it. And everyone's like, bitch, you know, shit.
No, you didn't.
Yeah.
But that's the same with podcast content too. Like, you see guys that on Instagram and like, maybe you'll post something and then they'll post something very similar and stuff. Like, go out and kind of get your own thing and kind of fall in your own realm, because one day, like, if they follow that your podcast and they see that you made one type of content, and then they go to another guy 2 days later and they still fall in that same thing and you have the same content, it's like, come on, man, you know, like, kind of do your own thing, get in your own niche. Like you talk about it all the time, and I kind of taken that kind of to heart, where you don't follow along or listen to a lot of hunting podcasts because you don't want to fall into that realm.
I don't have to subliminally affect what I do.
Right.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And that way, if I do something that another show does, or like, say somebody like, you know, you hang out with different people, like Ross might have a saying, like, zap that prick right in the heart. Like, Ross said, not that that's a saying that Ross says, it's just funny. If I just hung out with Ross and that was like his thing, eventually I'm going to start saying it. Like, subconsciously, it's like, or if someone says rad all the time, and next thing you know, you've been hanging out with them for 3-4 months, and you're like, oh, man, that's rad. You're like, oh, shit.
Even though you're like, hey, at first, like, rad's stupid, and then after a while, you're like, yeah, that's rad. Like, yeah. God damn it, now I'm saying it.
It's like the other day, I say stuff all the time at home, but I caught my wife saying what I say all the time. Like, she said it just basically copied how I said it. I'm like, yeah, we've been hanging around each other too long, I guess.
Well, I mean, it's just part of it, and nothing's wrong with that. That's called, you know, being your friends. Like, that's kind of what's funny. But I don't want that from a production standpoint of, like, you know, pick up on something that you say all the time, and all of a sudden I'm saying it, and then. But it's not always like words. It could be like topics or a segment or whatever. I'd rather it be a complete coincidence,
right?
If it happens, and then it's just like, sorry, but.
Well, there's only so many things that you can do in a podcast, right? Like, you're going to have segments. You're going to have overlapping segments.
Overlapping guests. You're going to have topics and all that, but it's your delivery.
You got to make it on your own.
It's your delivery. Mm-hmm.
You got to change it. Yep. So even if somebody has a veteran shout out like you guys have, they can do it in a different manner.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's fine, but just don't directly copy somebody else. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
One thing I've learned is that, you know, when you have multiple people interviewing the same guest, it's actually very satisfying when you can pull information out of them mm-hmm. that no one else could.
Right.
You know, you take that conversation in a different direction and, I mean, you feel accomplished because, hey, we brought something new.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, and a lot of it too is like, even if we've ever done that, it's just because I thought it would be interesting to talk to him about whatever,
mm-hmm.
you know what I mean? Versus you guys might be like, well, I know this guy went on this hunting trip. I want to know about, like, he went on this big fishing trip.
Mm-hmm.
You guys might tap into that. Whereas we heard he went on a whatever
moose trip.
Yeah. He killed a moose and maybe wasn't successful, but for some reason we were really interested in, like, tell us what happened on the hunt. And that might be our angle. Whereas you guys interview him a different way and you tap into people differently.
Well, Johnny Utah was a great experience with that because, you know, everyone's hit him up for, you know, all the stuff he's done, his background over and over and over. We caught him right after he did that big catfish down there on Potomac.
Yeah, what do they call that? The cat masters?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, you know, we were able to catch him on that and actually talk that. It's part of the show.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Yeah. So no one had heard it. No one. He hadn't really got to explain that other than his show. So.
See, that's a perfect example because he talked about it on our podcast, but we're limited in, like, how far we're going to talk about that. Like, we were like, what is that, you know? Whereas you guys probably tapped into it in a completely different way.
Right.
Because you know more and you're kind of, that's your niche is, like, you kind of talk about everything that way and could deep dive. And plus, you guys know more about fishing than we'll ever know. But
you guys have any catfish out there on the East Coast?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Where he was doing it, that was my backyard. That's nice. Just down the road from
okay.
me.
Really?
So
yep.
That's cool.
We've got a big convergence of three or four big rivers that are wonderful for smallmouth and catfish.
Hell, yeah. Big old
muskie,
kitties.
All the good stuff.
Really?
Awesome.
So, the only time I ever eat fish or anything is like when you guys are around. Seriously. Like if Trev's around, I was like, what is this? Oh, okay, I'll eat that.
I'm kind of excited. Whenever Trev comes back in town, he's bringing a little treat from the sea.
He's always got good food with him.
What do you got for us this time, Trev?
I brought down some Thresher steaks, and then you guys, famous.
Thresher.
So Thresher is obviously, it's a big shark.
Obviously, it's not obvious.
Sorry.
It's not obvious to the Midwest boys.
So,
we're landlocked, son.
So it's a shark. So we have Mako's, Threshers, Hammerheads. Obviously, we have Great Whites. We have a slew, brown sharks, lemon sharks. We don't have lemons. I'm sorry. Leopard sharks. But
can you eat Great Whites?
You can, actually. Great Whites are phenomenal eating. But now it's on the endanger list, so now you can't kill them.
Oh, really?
But back in the day, there's a lot of old fishermen that I know that are still captains, and they were able to kill some Great Whites back in the day, and they tell all the stories. Like, they come up on, like, a big whale kill, and there'll be a giant great white eating on it, and then they'll take their mate and they'll throw him on there, and then they'll force feed the great white, and then the guy will get back on and then fight the great white. Like,
what?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
No, hold on. You got to back up a little bit.
Time out.
Slow it down.
Throw his partner in.
So he has his mate, right, that works with him. That's what I do.
Okay.
So
his mate.
Deckhand.
Deckhand.
So he has a deckhand. They ended up coming up
You know what? We got barges on the Mississippi, so deckhand's more our language.
All right. So a deckhand, the guy that works on the boat.
Yeah.
Dude, you want me to draw you pictures? No.
Fuck yes.
Can you please?
Yeah.
So his deckhand, they came up on a big whale kill. And they saw that there was a great white feeding on it. So they ended up taking the deckhand. The deckhand got onto the big whale kill. And then they ended up taking off a big chunk of
the
whale.
So the whale's out there floating.
Yeah. So then it died. And then it's just floating around. It's just a dead kill.
So he's out there walking around on this whale.
That smells good.
It's disgusting.
Okay.
And so he ends up taking and chunking off a piece of the whale and feeding it.
Sawzall out there?
No, just a big knife and just like cut off.
Slice it up.
Yeah. And then put it on a hook. And he ends up feeding this fucking great white, and then ended up fighting it, and they ended up putting it in the boat. I mean, it was
fish on.
It's like huge. It's giant. The guy takes it to all the fishing shows with him. It's just
mounted or something.
Oh yeah, he's got it mounted. It's fucking giant, dude. It's as big as this room.
Jeez.
Was he had to bring a fucking semi with him?
Well, they ended up having to call a second boat to come in and help them harpoon it and get it into the boat and drag it in and everything like that, like back to the harbor and everything. Yeah.
Oh shit.
Yeah.
Man.
It's nuts.
Some real life Josh.
How big,
shit.
I mean, how was the weight approximate on something like that?
I would say probably north of 1,000 pounds.
That's a fish.
That's a fish.
Giant.
1,000 pounds.
And the thing is, like, right now we have more great whites in our area than we've ever had before because the seal population started to move up. So,
oh,
like,
really?
You hear, like, Cape Cod and, like, having all these great whites. Well, now our local area has a ton of great whites. And so many times, like, last week, one of our captains was out fishing, and they ended up having a great white come up after they were bottom fishing and had like a poor gear sea bass come up, and the great white was trying to eat it off the customer's hook off the back of the boat, maybe like a 5-footer.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So it's becoming
more. I'm sure they still get caught every once in a while, don't they?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, guys catch them because we're out shark fishing, and right. we, you know, you take a bucket of chum, you throw it in the water in a net, and then it just spews out pieces of bait, right?
Yeah.
And so every shark's going to come. I mean, it's not just limited to one type of shark.
Yeah,
so, so guys will see these giant 10, 12, 15-foot great whites come up
so
all the time.
So what do you do if you hook one?
I was going to say, well, how's the catch and release program work on that?
Well, the problem is that you have to remember how fast they are, right? So 9 times out of 10, they don't even land these fish. But if you do end up hooking one knowing it, you just cut the hook and I mean, cut the line and then just keep moving on with your day.
Oh, really?
But you don't want nothing to do with that thing. I mean, that thing is going to... I mean, it's like hooking into a freight train. Like, you're
that
not going to stop
fuck
it.
You up.
Yeah, dude. You're
how, talking how to, many people get lit up every year by them?
Which is the thing. It's like around us right now, like none. Like, not that many people get hit with great whites. Up yeah. north, I mean, I think Cape Cod maybe has one or two in the past couple of years, but they've kind of told people they can't go up past their knees or whatever, you know? But I think our local area, and I say this all the time, we have a bunch of surfers off the end of Long Island, New York. And I think that this year is going to be the year. If it's not this year, it's next year. Someone's going to get smoked because all the guys are out there surfing and they look like seals.
Yeah.
You
yeah.
know, that's why I stopped spearfishing, bro. I don't know. Like, you see me, like, could you imagine me in a wetsuit, bro? I look like the tastiest seal you've ever seen in your life. Like, bro, I'm just done, you know?
Nice big slow one right there.
I can definitely catch that one.
Yeah.
That's a right. coal seal right there, boys.
So going back to it, I brought down Thresher steak, which is, Thresher's a really good eating fish. When so you can eat Makos and Threshers. They say you can eat hammerheads too, but I've never had one. A lot of those, they actually piss through their skin. So you can't.
Well, sounds delicious.
Dude, I'm sorry, man, that we're trying to just get to what you brought, but this is interesting as shit to us.
Sorry.
To me it is. No, this is great. I love it.
So
they piss through their skin.
Piss through their skin, of course. Go ahead.
That's how sharks ended up. That's how they go to bath, and they piss through their skin. So they're not.
Makes sense.
It's like taste. When you kill one that pisses through their skin, it smells like pneumonia.
Mm-hmm.
So you wouldn't eat those ones. So Makos and Threshers, they do not. So then now they're edible. And like I was explaining to you guys with the Thresher steaks, they taste like it's like ribeye. It doesn't look, but it tastes like a steak, like the texture of it. Yeah. But it's just like a fish steak. It's crazy.
It'll mess with your head.
It'll mess with your head. Fish sticks.
We ought to do a video. Hey, we ought to do a video for our Instagram or your Instagram of us trying them or something.
We should, absolutely.
So how do you cook those? Like, do you cook them like well, or can you cook them like, do you even have to cook them?
Oh, yeah. You got a shark, you definitely have to cook. So I just do it. I just marinate it in like Italian dressing or like a ginger teriyaki and then just put it on the grill, just cook it all the way through and then just cut it. Literally, and just eat it.
Do we have gas for the grill?
If not, the
store next door.
Derogatory term. The gas station has them. Just what you do in the Midwest.
The gas station has it.
Yeah.
So we brought some of that, and then we brought some the famous striper fish cakes.
Very nice.
Nice. Yeah. That's exciting. Yep.
Getting hungry.
You're always going to eat well when Trev comes back.
Dude, you East Coast boys bring in the good shit, man. I'm telling you, because you guys just bring it all. Like, even Sean and Dan, they, mm-hmm. when they came up to hunt for a week last year, they brought all this stuff. I'm like...
Hey, they know.
Oh, dude.
What that got to do, baby.
What that got to do, baby.
They know we like to eat.
Well, you got to remember, too, man. Like I take for granted all the time being on the East, right? Because, like, and I'm like, I want to move to the Midwest, right? And then everyone's like... No, I want to go to the East and fish, right? We have that. But we kind of take it for granted because I want to come to big buck country. I want to shoot big bucks. You guys want to go to the East. So we actually, we have the best of both worlds, right? Because we get to come out here and you guys can come up there or whatever, but you would never leave that. Because how the heck am I going to leave the fishing world?
Yeah, you
right.
couldn't. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Next time we come out, I'll bring some shitty Mississippi catfish out with me.
some mud fish.
Yeah, just some mud butt fish.
But you guys have good taste in whitetails. Our whitetails taste like shit.
Do they?
Oh, well, they don't taste like shit, but they have. There's a different taste.
It depends if you get them up
fish.
In the laurels where they're living on the pines and the junk through the winter. You know,
yeah,
there's right. no real ag, not like
bark.
You guys have.
You know what? You know, you mentioned that, and I don't know how my other Midwest boys in here feel, but I killed a few years ago. I killed a buck. There was a really good. I think there's a spring down there in this bottom, and this buck came out of the bottom. I think that's that big 10 you helped me with, Austin. Mm-hmm. there's a spring down in there and the water's just like super clean where he came out of. So I think he was bedding low and came up. That buck was I guess it'd be a 5.5-year-old mature whitetail, was the best tasting whitetail I've ever had. Mm-hmm. And okay. I don't know, it had something to do with like the water he was drinking. I'm shot in the dark, because otherwise you would think like, man, I shot him like November 3rd or something, and he was pretty ruddy and pretty stinky, but the meat was fantastic. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's a little bit of variant from deer to deer, and I wouldn't say it's like huge, but I remember just, I think my expectation was this deer is going to taste like a buck, and right. It was delicious, like really good. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if you guys have any experience with that, if you know deer probably drinking fresher water. Is that silly that I'm assuming that?
No, I don't think so. I think every deer kind of has a little bit different taste to it.
Yeah, I agree.
It's totally on their diet, you think?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'd say.
I would think so, but I just wonder how much like water, you know what I mean, like plays a difference in how they taste.
I think a lot of it is aging the meat too. I've done a little bit of research on what's the ideal time frame to let meat hang. And then when you go to process it, and that has a lot to do with the tenderness of the meat. So maybe that deer hung for a day or two longer than what you normally would have or something.
I always tell the story too. We had this old boy in camp that he would let it hang till it got a real thin layer of mold on it.
Yep.
And then trim that off.
I'm not that brave, but
that's pretty brave.
You trim it off and then butcher it out. And it was,
science to it, man. Yeah.
It has to be dry though. It can't be humid when you do that.
Right. Right.
Cause otherwise I think that
it's going to spoil
the bacteria would get into the meat, not on like the surface. Cause I've seen guys, when you skin a deer, how it kind of gets like a glaze and like, you can kind of like touch the meat and it's kind of like a hard glaze.
That's what you want.
I think that's probably, and then once you got that, as long as it stays dry,
clean, cool and dry are the big ones.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like any other meat too. I think they do it with beef and everything else. Yep. Don't they? Let it
hang. Well, cause like hanging beef has to hang for 2 weeks.
Yep.
14 days.
Oh, it does.
Yeah.
Yep. Why? What's
tenderness.
They just do it for the taste and tenderness.
Yep.
I didn't know if it was like they had to let it hang because of whatever reason, but
no, I guess that's like the norm though, is to hang it for 14 days.
I don't know. I should know more about
that. That'd be interesting to do that with like a deer. Like, cause like most times, you know, we'll take it to skin
barn
it out
or whatever.
And then took it down to the butcher and they're butchering up that night.
So my family back home, we had a butcher farm. So we would do pigs and cows and everything. I don't know what the reason is, but we would have to hang beef for 14 days. And then deer, like everyone want to hang it for like 6-7 days. They want to have it aged and then they would have it cut. So we would like circulate it every week or whatever. I don't know the reason, but that's just what my uncle would say. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. It's like, you got to hang beef for this. You got to hang pork for a couple of days and this, that.
Probably what they found is like, this tastes better. Ends up better.
It's just the perfect amount.
The checklist of it.
Down, so it's nice and tender. That meat marbles real well.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's interesting stuff, man. Like the shark meat thing blows my mind. Like, I'm so excited to try that.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Do you hang a shark?
No. We don't have time for that, man. Like getting that thing in the boat and breaking that thing down, you want to get that thing done as possible. I mean, the one that we killed this week was 350 pounds with 70-something inches.
Wow.
So when you get that thing in the boat, and there's two of us trying to get this thing in the boat, the first thing you want to do, you just want to break this thing down and get done with it, you know?
Like, yeah.
It's kind of crazy, actually. So they don't have any bones. They have one bone that runs down the middle of it.
Like
and
the vertebrae?
It's cartilage. Yeah, that's it. So you literally, like, you cut around that, and then everything else is just steak. So it's pretty much like, I was talking to Steven about it, like, so if the thing's 350 pounds, your yield is 10 times more, right? Just cut the head, the tail, and everything else is all meat.
How do you clean it? Do you just cut the head, tail off, throw it on ice, or what?
So you just have this big section, right? And then you just cut it off in sections, and then you go in and you just cut out the cartilage in the middle, and then it makes four steaks.
Their gut and the like organs. Like, how much of a space is that taking up?
So if I could kind of explain it, it would be like a top loin, right, on like a back strap, and then it would just have the stomach cavity. But it's really not all that much, man. It's kind of tiny, actually. Believe it or not, for the size of what it is. And you just take it and you just take out the cartilage, and it'll be like four steaks. I mean, just for, you know, terms. So it would be like, there's like a silver skin in between each loin, I guess we can call it. Mm-hmm. And then you just cut it out, and then you just cut it into smaller steaks and then package it up. It's sick, actually. It's pretty cool.
And you do this all right there on the boat.
Yeah, man. Yeah, I mean.
God, we got to do that one of these days.
It's so cool.
So fun.
Yeah, you just take it and I'll cut it up into sections, like maybe like four foot sections. I mean, not for 4 foot, like, you know, 2 foot sections, and then you just cut it up and you just stake it out, and that's it.
So bizarre.
It's
so
crazy how simple. I'll have to do a YouTube video on
when
it.
When you take off, you load coolers full of ice and you're already set up for it. So then you.
So a lot of those boats actually have like fish boxes in the bottom underneath the boat, and you just literally, it's full, filled up with ice, and you just throw the fish right inside of it. You know, like we'll chunk it up or whatever, like tuna. For example, you corm. What that is, you just take the head off, take the guts out, and you just throw it right in there.
The whole thing.
The whole thing. Yeah, okay. And then you just, you know, it's like gutting a deer, right? And you just do it, put it on ice, and then you just move on to the next one. You just keep filling up the cooler, and then when you get back, you take care of everything at the dock.
Simply, Steve, have you done a lot of fishing like this at all? Or
I'm actually not an offshore guy. Yeah. I like to stick around more on the freshwater side, rivers, yeah. lakes, streams, creeks.
Yeah.
And the couple of times that we've made it up to get on the big water with Trev, either nothing was happening or we had absolutely horrible water.
Yeah. Oh, like just so, choppy and all that yeah. or what?
I mean, the side drifting and what we're in 7 foot swells or something.
No kidding.
Doesn't work well for me.
I wouldn't like that. I'd probably get sick.
How far off the shore do you guys go?
So it all really depends, honestly. Like, so a lot of stuff. So when we look at stripers and stuff, it's all inshore. And then we kill, you know, when we're going shark or tuna fishing, that's offshore, maybe. Well, we've been killing some sharks real close, but because they've been coming in. But normally tuna fishing's 20, 30 miles from the dock.
Holy wow. shit.
That's yeah. a long way.
I mean, that's short. That's your inshore stuff. When you start hitting the continental shelf, you're talking 70, 80, 100 miles from shore.
Jeez. And you've been out that far?
Oh, yeah. That's we fish that me. All the time.
yeah, that's shit. A big yeah. canary.
It's amazing out there, honestly.
So it's just, I feel like I'd lose track of which direction you were supposed to go.
Yeah, I mean, we have GPSs and compasses. I mean, right. it's just like being in the big woods, right? I mean, yeah, you just yeah. you pay attention to that stuff, and yeah, you just you get your mind.
Nothing like that, Trev.
No, nothing like that at all. Actually, when shit goes down out there, man, it gets nerve wracking. I mean, every time I go to leave for offshore, I mean, the anxiety's pretty high. Like, you know, what's the weather? What's going on? You know, can the seas change? Is the wind going to change? Is the tide going to change? Like, you know, there's a lot that goes into it, man, because you're far from shore. I mean, 100 if something goes
miles.
Out, yeah, I mean, the continental shelf is like you're talking right around 70 to 80 miles is where you start hitting some. The continental shelf, we call it the canyons.
Now, at the shelf, what is your depth where it's shallow and then where it falls off? Like, what depth-wise, what are you looking at there?
So, like, we go in, which would be, oh, man. So, it goes in fathoms. So, we start fishing right around 30 to 100 fathoms. So, there's...
What does that mean?
What's a fathom?
Oh, man, of course.
Hey, you're on our show.
I'm just so interested in this because on the Mississippi, like a deep hole is like 30 foot.
Yeah.
Right.
Oh,
like
no.
We're fishing like 12 foot. You
no,
know?
you're talking probably 600-700 feet of water.
Yeah.
A fathom.
Dude, and that just,
feet. That, 6 feet like, to one
six
fathom.
6 feet to a fathom.
Okay.
Oh, really?
So 100 fathom is 600 feet.
Good.
That's what you're fishing for depths. And the thing is, so when you start getting out there and you start sword fishing, there's a lot of bottom dwellers, but like a lot of the stuff that we fish for is all on the top. So we fish tuna up top, we fish and we trolling. So you're fishing tuna and mahi and all kinds of other stuff on the top. And then you start fishing like swordfish and man, tile fish, and there's a lot of stuff that's bottom dwellers also. Mm-hmm. So we have electric reels, and you fish on the bottom. And
dude, the reels nuts. On this I mean, thing's got to be the size
so,
of a crane.
Yeah. So when you hook up on something, and it's 600 feet down, it's like an electric wheel. It'll bring it up for you.
And then you start, yeah, then you have to, you obviously fight it also. You know, like you're on the reel, but you just start reeling it with the electric reel, and it starts coming up, and then sometimes you got to turn the handle.
Oh,
and,
fuck, you'd be like Popeye reeling yeah. that thing by hand all the way up.
When I just fuck, you know.
When I first,
mind-blowing. This is crazy to me.
When I first started doing it, man, we did it all by hand. I mean, we still do, because, I mean, the electric reel's at $1,000 north of that, you know, for a cheap one. So, like, jeez. You have to spend a lot of money. You have to bring battery. I mean, there's a lot more stuff that goes into it, right? Like, yeah. You have to remind you, I don't do this every day, the offshore stuff. The offshore stuff is like me going deer hunting. Like, I fish inshore. That's what I do mm-hmm. every day. And then our fun stuff is to go offshore and do that. That's the more of the fun stuff. So you get to kind of do that every once in a while. So I don't do it all the time.
Wow. Dude, that's mind-blowing. Sorry to, like, deep dive on all that stuff. It's just so interesting. Like, you know what I mean? You always see it, but you don't know the details of it.
Right.
Or know, like, I don't know half the terminology you just said. Like, it's mm-hmm. Spanish to me.
Dude, going out, that far out, 100 miles offshore and 600 foot down, like, that's not for a Midwest boy. That doesn't sound like a whole lot of fun to me. I think I'd be shitting myself.
Oh, I'd do it in a heartbeat.
I'd be nervous as fuck.
It's amazing, though. Like, and let's I say go. It to everybody, for anybody that hasn't done it, man.
I'd be nervous.
It's an experience of a lifetime. Like, when you get out there, man, like the sea turtles, the waves, I mean, the whales, the dolphins, the life. I mean, it's like National Geographic sometimes when you're out there. And, like, the things you see and just a – it's – it's a once in a lifetime trip, man. It's like it's like for us going to go to Alaska or us to go to somewhere crazy to hunt, right? Yeah. Like you just
it's a big deal.
Yeah, it is. And it's fun and you got to do it at least once. Yeah. I mean, you really do. I mean, just to go out and experience it and see what it's all about. It is a really
cool.
It's cool
you can do that like as your job pretty much, you know, and well, it is your job.
Yeah.
And then so I don't want to jump from that to like make your job not seem as cool, but like what do you do, man? Like cuz I think that's worth bringing up. We probably should more often because of the grind of the podcast game, which we covered, and then your day job is that's not easy to do. So you guys are at that 100 episode mark is impressive because that shows the commitment.
So appreciate that.
I know you know a ton about computers and stuff like that, which fits in well.
Well, it's kind of odd. Like I almost considered myself the redneck tech before the whole redneck tech crew came out and became big because the end of the day, this was not my forte. I had nothing to do with it growing up. Came from a cattle ranching family.
Yeah.
And got into the military and got out of the military and then ended up
helping for your service, tech company. By the way.
I appreciate that. Mm-hmm. Kept me out of trouble.
Yeah.
That's about it. Now it's getting me into more trouble, but we won't go into that. So basically, had a rear admiral that I had worked for in Virginia, had reached out, had a program and said, look, you guys understand the military, how these programs work, how the equipment works on the ground. We need you to come over and kind of liaise between the technical nerd side and the user side. And that's kind of what
middleman.
That's what led into it. Well, 4 years into it, I realized I hate the corporate world.
Yeah.
God, they're the biggest thieves you ever met.
Mm-hmm.
So I walked away. Ended up getting a government job just doing, you know, IT support, we'll say, in general. And
yeah, we'll say that.
Yeah. I don't get to work on as cool of things, but I get to work on some pretty cool stuff that I really don't want to put too much out there. But
say no more.
Cover down two really cool sites and a lot of historic stuff. Get to see a lot of things a lot of people don't get to see. I've got to build some servers and equipment that are in some pretty cool places.
Yeah.
So on that end, you know, that's really where the tech side of it came in and sucked me into cameras and mics and the whole gear aspect of the podcast. So
yeah, because we ended up talking about gear a little bit and we bought a new computer for some stuff we have coming down the line and you're like,
which we thought was really badass, which it is.
Oh, it is. Oh, don't get me wrong. Oh,
absolutely.
We bought the best one a dude could just go out and buy, I think. And then, depends what we need. And then you're like, I could have just built you one. I'm like,
God damn it.
Yeah, you probably could have. Huh?
It's all right. It's all right. There's time. We got things going down the road. You know,
One he's building for
when
us.
When you need a video specific one, you know, we'll sit down and we'll get something set up.
Hey, we could have two.
There you go.
Hey, we might need four.
Hey, you never know. I just have monitors here, and just then I'll just look over the monitors.
You're like Mr. Wilson. We just see your eyes.
Can you build one monitor that has like transparent covering? That way I can look through the monitor.
Funny enough, I'll show you the computer I just built for work.
And like the shell is like clear?
It's literally the front screen of it is a computer screen that's transparent.
Really? So I've seen a lot of guys have, and I don't know if it's just for looks, but it's like looks like there's like liquid running through it, or if it's some sort of like
that's actually a cooling system for the computer. Because when you build these custom high end computers, basically just like a car engine, it gets hot. You know what's the worst thing for performance? Heat.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
So when you get down that rabbit hole of, you know, I want a fast computer that can do this stuff quick, clean, and efficient.
Just the fan.
Got to cool it.
Air cooled is no longer acceptable. You need freaking water cooled computer.
It's like that old two stroke. You know, you want to put more power to it. You got to put some liquid in there to cool it down.
So, yeah, when you get on the gaming side, you see people put, you know, the cool liquid colors and the lights and all of that. But at the end of the day, man, it's just antifreeze cooling the system.
Oh, is it really? Yeah, pretty much. That's interesting as shit, though. I mean, I saw that and I'm like, damn, that thing must. I mean, I don't know shit about it, so it looks intense to me, and it looks like a lot.
You got dipstick, you got to check it every once in a while.
Change the oil on it.
Don't want to run it out of water.
Literally, the only way I
figured this stuff out is I got sick and tired of my old stuff taking forever to kick out videos and whatnot. I was like, how do I do it bigger, better, faster?
Yeah.
And just, you know, like everything, just head first, arms back, dove right in. I was like, I'm going to build my first computer.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, man, I feel like a freaking nerd.
That's cool.
The first time meeting you, I would have never guessed you did this shit for a living.
Oh, no, dude.
That's also why you got hit up to do the, basically the user to the tech side of things.
Right.
You know,
it's, yeah. And that's, it's the funny thing because here, no one would look at me and think tech. Mm-mm. But when I'm at work, everyone looks at me and they're like, what the hell are you doing here, dude?
Yeah, really?
You know, I'm in there in, you know, the WCB hat and boots and, you know, whatnot, you know, camo half the time I'm in there, and everyone else is, you know, suit and ties or government outfits.
You're not fitting the crowd. You're standing like, a little bit.
Can I see your ideas? Like, yeah, dude, sure.
Do you actually work here?
I belong here, man.
Yeah.
I think it's one of the greatest things, honestly, especially for, you know, just a duo of for the podcast, because, you know, Steven can dive into that stuff, like went and got a drone and all this other stuff and the tech stuff. And I'm like,
you're sitting here listening to this podcast and you're thinking about your arrow setup randomly. And we highly recommend Victory Archery. I like the Rip TKO. That's an arrow I've been shooting for years. I have no desire to switch, but I kind of want to explore what else is in the Victory Archery arrow library, if you will. The Rip TKO, though, is my favorite. I've had awesome success from whitetails to turkeys to bears to antelope, and we know some good buddies on our team that are going to take the Victory arrows. I don't know if they're going to run the Rip TKO or something a little heavier or what they're planning on for a moose hunt coming up. So I like the Rip TKO. If you're switching your arrow setup or want to just try something new, check out the whole line of Victory arrows.
Hey, everybody. You probably got a dog, don't you? Who doesn't? Who doesn't love dogs? Why don't you treat your dog, though? Get him a nice Thermabed from Thermoseat. It's got the Softec foam, offers your dog that beanbag feel. You know, why not treat your butt right? Why not treat your dog right? Check out Thermoseat and the Thermabed for your dog.
I'm blown away at that because I have no clue. You know, I'm like you, Kurt, like, and not everybody else in here probably, actually, and have no idea. And Steven just jumps right into it, and he's like, yeah, we'll do this, we'll do this, we'll do pictures and this and that. And it works out really well, man, especially with some of the new stuff that we have coming down the pipe, like our YouTube side and our videos and stuff like that. I mean, we did our hunt this year, and Steven filmed it and put it all together and edited it, and it was like, wow, man, I could never fathom that.
It's awesome. Yeah, and it was early on. I ain't going to lie, I geek out on the cameras and the film and all of that work. I love production work.
Yeah.
That to me is soothing, you know, getting done doing even a show in post.
Yeah, I'm enjoying it more, but I know enough to be dangerous, but I definitely don't consider myself an expert, you know what I mean? But it's fun.
It sucks you in.
Turn your hard work into something that people can enjoy.
So. Right.
Hey, I want to talk podcasting a little bit, going back to this. Who in the about 100 episodes that you've had on, who has been your favorite or who stands out to each of you?
Steve, you can start that one because I don't know.
God, that's a real tough one.
Basically, I'm asking that question. So if someone hasn't listened, they want to check out an episode, they know.
Yeah, if they were going to go listen to one, what would it be?
Yeah.
Okay.
Give us the one that people should listen to, and then your favorite guest so far.
I got that.
Hit it, Trev.
Will Jimeno, man, was probably our number one best podcast, hands down. Will Jimeno is, if you guys haven't heard of him, he's a true American hero.
Mm-hmm.
This man he's a hunter. I won't go too much in depth.
This is a pretty recent podcast, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Will was actually part of the...
He kind of got stuck in.
Well, no, but he was he worked for the city of New York. As a Port Authority officer, and he is one of two people to survive from the actually were underneath the Twin Towers.
Oh,
avid hunter. This dude is amazing. One of the best people I've ever talked to. Bleeds red and white and blue like nobody ever. And this gentleman was supposed to be hunting on the day of 9/11. He was chasing a big buck. His wife told him, he says, that buck will be there during rut and you'll kill him during the rut. So he went to work that morning, and did he not know what was about to happen? And he goes through a whole story, and he was one of two that actually survived from being underneath the Twin Towers. And his story is absolutely incredible, man. And we got off that podcast and we literally didn't talk, man. I was in tears just listening to the story and what he went through, man. It was absolutely incredible. And that's probably by far the best podcast we've ever done.
Wow, I can see why, man. Okay,
I got goosebumps just thinking about it.
Yeah, sounds powerful.
Ooh, I would.
And I think his story needs to be heard too. I mean, what he went through, and it's just, it's next to none.
What episode number is that? So people are looking.
Oh Jesus! I don't even
pull it up.
Steven's on it.
I'm on it.
Well, you're on their website. You could probably.
Yeah, you have to go to a list.
What was his name again?
Will Jimeno.
Will Jimeno.
Tune in.
You can click on that one.
Man, that's crazy.
Yeah, I want to listen to that.
I was going to go hunting, but I went to work instead.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's crazy because he goes through the whole story of like how it all taken off, and there was five of them in his little group of guys, and they literally, him and his sergeant were the only two that survived, and he lost three of them while he was down in there, man, and it's incredible, dude.
Did I pass it?
Right there. Trapped
under the Twin Towers.
Oh, shit.
Yep. That's him right there. Episode 78.
Boom.
That's the one, episode 78. But it's just incredible, man. And now he's completely injured and he can't work. So now he hunts a lot and travels around. He just wrote a book. I don't remember the name of it.
I don't
want to quote it wrong, but yeah, he ended up writing a book of children's book and an adult book about it.
No kidding.
Yeah, nobody.
There's a big movie for it.
Mm-hmm. Oh, really?
Yeah, mm-hmm. It's mainstream. Was in the theaters. The works. His no whole kidding. Story.
Oh, he was actually buried underneath there and survived.
Oh, yeah. Literally. So,
I thought he was in it and like just made it out.
No. So what happened was he went in under
both towers.
He went in and he was in the tunnel between 1 and 2, and it all collapsed on top of him. He wasn't up in it. He was Port Authority for the George Washington Bridge, which comes across the river, and he ended up leaving there and going to the Twin Towers. Went to the Twin Towers. They started gathering all kinds of safety gear with a cart, and they start going underneath the Twin Towers, and it ends up collapsing.
No shit.
So he's inside.
That's how loud that would have been.
Yeah, he said it was just insane.
The story's nuts.
I got to listen to that.
It's incredible. And the boy is a hunter. I mean, he hunts all over. He does all. He's still. I mean, his thing is turkey hunting with his little ones. I mean, it really humbles you when listening to that story. I mean, especially you know us being outdoorsmen and him being outdoorsmen, and it just humbles you how important it is for him to be in the outdoors and in a tree stand. Like he don't even care if he kills something, mm-hmm. just taking in the birds and whatever. And that's all the stuff that we do, but at a whole new level, man. Mm-hmm. And it really humbles you to be in the woods. It really does.
Oh man, that's intense.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Damn. Well, from that's a killer recommendation because I have not listened to that one. I will. Who's your guys' favorite guest? Not that you're like you like them over somebody else, just like what interview do you think was interesting or do you feel that you guys killed it?
I still honestly, one of my favorite shows to date was Cliff Cadet.
Yeah.
From Urban Archery NYC. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, just the story and conversation we had, you know, listening to a guy from the middle of nowhere in the inner city of New York wants mm-hmm. to pick up a bow and go hunt.
Yeah,
I mean, that was a blast.
Yeah, he's a good dude. Mm-hmm. He's a good dude. What about you, Trev?
Favorite, honestly, that's a tough one, man.
It is.
We have some really good guests.
Pick one. Just pick one. Come on.
Just do it.
Okay,
this is my next question. Who would you absolutely never have on again?
Thanks, bro. Appreciate it.
Shots fired.
Jesus.
Okay, I'll take the first one.
I'll answer that. I'm just kidding.
I mean, there was this guy named Kurt that we had on.
Yeah, that guy.
Fuck that guy.
Total dickbag.
Yeah. He's so conceited. No, I'm just kidding.
Dude, thinks he's cool because he's got holes in his ears.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
actually,
I can't really say that
for a while.
What a fag.
Yeah.
Now, there's definitely been a couple that, you know, afterwards were not that they were bad people
or
bad shows, but man, some people are just not made to be on shows.
Yeah, it's just the way it goes. Some people make you work for the interview pretty hard because they just don't know how to talk on it or whatever.
Yeah.
I think, honestly, one of my favorite recent ones was Philip Glass. We started going over a lot of stuff about Africa. I'm pretty passionate about Africa. I have family that's from there and stuff, and always hearing about it and hanging out with PHs and stuff, and how important it is for us as hunters here. Talk about conservation. I mean, conservation over there is something that
that's the
we'll
model
never,
that keeps everything going.
Right. Well, the problem is, like, by me, where I live in the armpit of America, liberal central, they literally just banned the importation of the Big Six. And what that really does, and we went into this on that podcast, was just how impactful that is for that country, like, and how important it is for us to go there and hunt and other countries to be there and hunt and learn, like, about what's going on over there. And these guys are making these assumptions about over there, with how much of the money goes in the economy, the food that goes in the economy, all these things that go into it. And these guys just don't understand it.
Yeah.
You know, so we kind of dove into that. And that was kind of fun for me because I'm passionate about it. You know,
yeah,
I really,
right. I'd go to Africa, I think.
Yeah.
Am I living under a rock? Am I the only one that didn't know you couldn't import the Big Six anymore?
Well, it was just in Connecticut right now.
Okay.
Yes, I thought just that one liberal state.
Wasn't there an import ban for a while, though, on a lot of the animals in Africa? Like, they stopped it?
They tried to after the whole
Trump opened it back up.
Leo the lion, oh, really? Whatever yeah. situation that was.
Well, the whole Cecil thing. So I got a little bit of an insight on that. Cecil, that guy was a younger PH,
mm-hmm.
And he's like, you know, like you guys have these bands here, right? So the banding is the study of the turkey, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's the same as what happened with Cecil. He had a tracking collar on him. They found a kill. They got the legal paperwork to be able to hunt that lion. And what ended up happening was that young PH never saw the collar. When he came up on Cecil and it had the collar on it, he freaked out and threw it in the woods.
So now
that's what got him.
Yeah, so that's because he freaked out. But it's part of the study, right? I mean, like when you kill something like that has a band or a tag or whatever,
yeah, it's a legal kill.
It's part of the study.
Right.
Well, him being a young PH, he freaked out. That's where all of this trickled down from. This is the story that I got from another PH in Africa. So
yeah,
I mean, it could all be a lie. I don't know, but it sounded good. And
hey, just go with it, man. It's yeah. making a good yeah. story.
Go with
so,
it.
So that's what he told me about the whole Cecil thing when that had happened was because a young PH just freaked out about it having the collar, and then they started investigating it and so on and so forth, and
yep.
that's where it kind of shifted.
And wasn't that lion an outcast anyway? That's why he's by himself?
That's a big thing about the lions over there, right, is that you have – if you could have an inner circle, right, that's a safari, and everything that gets pushed out of there – gets kicked out of its pride. Because a big thing with the lions, right, in my understanding is that if you go and you kill a lion, another mature lion is going to come in and kill that one lion's young, right?
Right.
So that's why they don't like the killing of the lions. Well, with Cecil or any other big mature lion, they push them out of the pride and they go out. And then you're killing them on the outside. You're not actually killing them inside the safari,
yeah,
quote unquote, right?
Yeah.
So they wait until they push them out of pride. That's with all the African animals. So you're just killing the mature ones that come out that are going into the normal population of everybody mm-hmm. else. So that's kind of how that happens. So you're not, even if you killed Cecil.
I don't want to spend a lot of time on this, but I feel like because we're talking about it, it should get brought up a little bit. You see this Barstool Sports article. Another American poacher has killed a beloved lion in Zimbabwe, and it's time we start selling licenses to hunt poachers. So I'll be honest, I haven't read all this.
Oh boy.
But from my understanding, it's...
That doesn't sound like biased media.
Yeah. So from my understanding, it was illegal.
There's Cecil right there.
That's Cecil?
Yeah, that's Cecil the lion.
So from my understanding, this was a legally taken lion, but I haven't read it, so don't hold me to it. But I know the issue is, like a lot of... hunters are in that Barstool like community. And mm-hmm. I know you see some of those like hunting pages that call people out for unethical behavior or not really standing up for hunters and being owned by the.
Well, I like right there. Go down a little bit. It says the hunter thought to be American. So they don't even know for sure.
Right.
Like, what the fuck?
But like,
that's just a picture of a lion. Actual picture of Cecil standing there. He's kind of a mutt, really.
Yeah. He's not an impressive looking lion.
It's like a big mature buck.
Yeah.
You know, you can tell by looking.
He looks very mm-hmm. mature. He's an old dog.
Yeah, he looks like old dogs in general, just wore out.
I mean, is that his mane around his head
yeah.
there?
Yeah.
It's like gray.
It's pathetic.
Mangy.
So what the issue is like Sydney Wells, Tim Wells' daughter, works for Barstool. And I know she was getting called out by a lot of these people, like, hey, you're an advocate for this. Like you work for this company. You need to make a stand and do it. And then, you know, I don't know if a lot of people know, but Meat Eater and Barstool are owned by Churnin Group. They're in the same family. It'd be mm-hmm. like Outdoor Group owns Elite and Slick Trick. And if Slick Trick, all of a sudden everybody just thinking about the irony of this, if everybody from Slick Trick just became against shooting animals right. and then Elite was like, yeah, but I don't agree with that. Okay, well, what are you gonna fucking do about it then? Right. It's kind of like, and you know, don't get me wrong, like I don't want to get into this whole thing right now, but I think this is worth mentioning. Like, I am a fan of Meat Eater, but like the whole Churnin Group thing, when we asked Ted Nugent about hey, what's your opinion on this Churnin Group Meat Eater, like, are we being infiltrated from the inside out? And his response was, well, Steve's a smart guy, he knows what he's doing. I'm like, well, that's not what I asked. Like,
It was a touchy subject, seemed like.
Touchy, and then I feel like when you bring that up to bigger people, the first thing they do is they go, you know, if you're watching this on video, they're going like, nope, I like them. They got good judgment. I'm out. I don't want to say anything.
Right.
Yep.
It's like we're being infiltrated. The big deep pockets are going to get us from the inside out.
Well, like, in today's day and age, you got to have your guard up about everything political. I mean, the hunting game that we're in and everything. Yeah. So, yeah.
And I get it to a point, like, you know, if you really don't know, don't really, you know, I'm not going to, like, if you ask me if I was in this situation, I'd be like, I'm looking into it and I'm going to do something about it once I get every angle right.
Get educated on it.
But yeah. With a lot of it's like, you know, we're months into this, a year into this, 2 years into this, and like, we're still cool with like churning group being anti-gun, anti-hunting, and then allowing their outlets to be posting anti-hunting media that's clearly biased like this.
And encouraging hunting a poacher.
Yeah. Yeah, right. Well, killing a person.
That
yeah.
part makes
yeah.
me laugh anyways, because who's over there hunting the poachers already? Our former U.S. servicemen and women.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and whose money is going to help fight the poachers?
The ours. Conservationists, the hunters.
$100, yeah.
Yeah.
So
we're already doing that, guys. Don't put a post up. We don't need your help. We got it covered.
Yeah.
Yeah. We need to stand for that. Just boycott them.
I agree, but.
Because what are they really doing for us?
What do you do?
Yeah, I mean.
Well, to what level are they going to go?
Yeah, right.
Our 10% of hunters versus 90% of non-hunters or antis.
Hey, watch your hunting show on Netflix. There.
Exactly.
Or even the uneducated. I think a lot of people are just uneducated, and then they read something like that, and then they jump on that bandwagon. You know what I'm saying?
Well,
like,
and most of the time, they don't even read the damn article. They just read the headline.
I didn't read the article.
Clickbait.
Right. I didn't, but I admitted it. But it would have been different if I would have been like, this is all wrong.
Right, right.
I just read the headline, though. I came in like with super opinions on details of it, it was like, I didn't actually read it.
Have you seen the Netflix series Trophy?
No, I have not.
Bro, go and watch it. It's honestly one of the most important things when it comes to African hunting, right? So they decided that they were going to follow around this dude, Philip Glass, right? And they were going to talk about how hunting is so bad, and they were going to try and like turn against hunting in Africa. Well, what they didn't know is that they were mind-fucked when they actually followed this guy around and what it actually takes and what it actually goes into. Like the rhinos, for example. Like what they do for conservation, because the poaching operations that go over there to try and cut off the horns of the rhino, the white rhino, and how they're... It's nuts, dude. You just got to go and watch it, because it actually turns the page of what hunting really is in Africa and actually shed a lot of light. And it was in with... on Netflix, so a lot of antis ended up watching it to see what it is, because they thought that it was going to be that realm of like
fit their
shitting
narrative.
On hunting.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And they turns around.
They might have realized that without hunters, there is no conservation in Africa.
Yeah.
I mean, we are conservation in Africa.
It's a free-for-all if we're not over there. There's no money and everything, you know. It's crazy. I didn't know. I'll have to watch that. I was expecting you to say like they just bashed us the whole time.
No.
Okay, that's
they
good.
Were trying to, and it just did not work in their favor. And
so
they,
I wonder
they
if
they're putting it out.
The producers were there and were like learned this like as it was going.
Oh,
on.
Oh yeah, I mean they followed this guy through and hunted with him in multiple places, and they did a lion hunt with him. They did a rhino hunt with him with different hunters, obviously. But yeah,
does the production kind of show like the change in mindset for the people?
Absolutely.
Oh, it does. Oh, very cool.
That's awesome.
I'll have to watch that. That sounds good.
It's incredible, actually. And I mean, you know. Obviously, like, you know, I've never been to Africa, but it directly affects us.
I would go.
Oh, yeah.
I would go 100%. I think it would be incredible to just see it and everything like that. My biggest thing about going there, honestly, is that everything wants to kill you, from a parasite to 10,000 pounds. Like, everything wants to kill you. You know what I'm saying? That's
no different than Louisiana.
Yeah, you're right. Texas.
Good for that guy, though. Seriously, for even allowing these fuckheads to follow him around that don't want him kill anything.
That'd be scary.
Going hunting with him. Well, like, I wouldn't want anybody following me when I'm hunting.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he probably realized the opportunity there to actually open some people's
That's
eyes
true.
Up that mm-hmm. wouldn't normally follow him. So good for him.
Hey, yeah. Did we ever tell you guys? Well, we're getting to the end here. I don't know if I ever told you guys about this. I think you guys knew, Austin and Ross. Remember that production company that reached out to us last year?
Yes.
It might have been a year and a half ago, 2 years ago now. But over, a year and a half ago?
Probably a year and a half ago, yeah.
We got a company reached out to us from, I think, from New York City, that was going to produce this reality show for one of these like major networks. And they found the podcast and reached out to Eric and I and a couple other people in the industry and wanted to film a series of us taking this like these inner city hipster, like liberal type people to the Midwest and teaching them how to hunt. And that's how they pitched it to us. And I was like, that could be cool. Like, you know, we'd be interested. Right. So Eric and I did like some interview stuff with them. Well, then a couple months go by, they hear more. They started making the sizzle reel for it, like where they wanted us to get on and do some video interview stuff. And I'm like kind of hearing it out a little bit. I'm like, I don't know about this. So we get in the next meeting. It was like, okay, hey, we're Zoom meeting with this production team from New York City. And they're like, okay, we need you to like say certain things on camera. That way we can cut it and like pitch it to these networks. And like this company was legit. Like they already had, like, I don't even want to get into it because I don't want to like them have them pick us apart or anything, but they have shows that you watch that are very popular that are on
Discovery Channel,
History, Discovery, HGTV, all the major networks like that. So I'm like, this, they know how to do this. And it ends up, they're like, they wanted me to say something. I don't know what they had you say, Eric, but okay, I need you to say something like, hell yeah, I'm competitive. And I was like, what do you mean? Like, what do you mean? Oh, this is a competition. Like, you're taking your hipster out and you're competing against another hunter and their hipster.
Taking your hipster out. Like you're taking your dog for a walk.
That's my word. That's my wording. They worded it different, but
you're going to take your liberal out hunting.
But that'd also be my wording. But that's basically what they were saying. I'm like, so this is a competition between, I take my yuppie
out. And it's taken five meetings to get to that point.
Oh, even then, months.
Months.
And I don't know, maybe they decided not to use us.
I don't know.
Because I was kind of like, I don't like this competition thing.
Well, they
like,
weren't being real clear right out the gate, so that's a red flag from the get-go.
It was freaking weird.
And I talked to some people, because, you know, if Eric and I were going to do this, we're like, make sure you get your contract, and you have this, this, and this, and this. And I'm like, we would have had to hire lawyers.
Oh, yeah.
Because I heard rumor, like, when the Landrys, like Troy Landry, I don't know, I've never actually watched an episode of the show, I just know him from the Shoot 'Em thing, that the first, I heard this, I don't know how true it is, the first year he did that show, they just paid him gas money for his boat.
Yep.
Oh.
And he was just stoked to get gas money for his boat.
Because he just signed the contract. He didn't know what was in it.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. I hope that's false and just a rumor, but that's just what you hear. He's like, you know, if you ever get an opportunity to do something like that, make sure you lawyer it up. But anyway, nothing. I was thinking about it the other day. I'm like, oh, I never heard back from them.
I know. I was thinking, I actually thought about it the other day.
Yeah, it was over the holidays we were doing all that. Not this last year, the year before. Mm-hmm. So it's been about a year and a half.
That's nuts.
Yeah, it's kind of weird, right?
It's funny how the liberals walk away from the people who were smart enough to think for themselves.
No shit.
So I was like, oh, this is a competition. Like, I don't know.
Yeah, it sounded like a setup to me.
Mm-hmm.
But it was definitely weird.
Because what would have happened was they wouldn't have picked fun people to go hunting with. They would have been the worst fucking human beings.
Total Karen. Oh.
Karen. Just a let me talk to your manager haircut the whole time.
Karen's and Richard's.
Yeah.
Don't be a Richard.
Bad. Bad. Well, I appreciate you guys making the drive.
We appreciate you having us, bro.
The outdoor drive.
It's always worth it.
Hey, there you go.
We learned a lot about fishing.
Yeah.
Sorry about that to you hunting guys.
Anything you guys want to plug or talk about or anything while we're here?
No, I think.
Yeah, if they want to know more, they know where to find us.
Yeah.
Come check it out.
It was a fun podcast. Get to learn a little, just conversate in general.
Yeah, and I mean, if they want to follow along with any of the hunting or fishing stuff, I mean, we're on Instagram, we're on Facebook, the Outdoor Drive, East Coast Trev, Steve, Outdoor Drive. I mean, we're out there. You'll find us.
Yeah. Beautiful. Appreciate you guys.
No, we appreciate you, dude. And thanks for paving the road, man. We really appreciate that, honestly.
Just hustling, dude.
That's it.
You know how it is. Appreciate you guys. You know what to do. Go shoot your bow. We love you. Hey guys, I know we're at the end. We're switching it up a little bit with the veteran shout out. Just trying at the beginning, trying at the end, trying it in the mid roll here and there. The veteran shout out, you can submit your own veteran at workingclassbowhunter.com/veteran shout out. And it is presented by Operation HHA USA, uniting service members in archery and helping servicemen and women get back into the outdoors. We have all the information on the veteran shout out tab where you can submit your own veteran, as well as the 2021 archery shoot tour for HHA USA. So submit them there. Help us with pronunciations.
However you say that.
Yes. And then we will do our best to get to them. So Doug is not here. So we're taking over, Eric and myself. And Eric, take it away.
All right. This is submitted by Norman Farley. And the veteran name is Aaron Hall. Pretty easy last names there.
Thank you. Thanks for having easy names.
Aaron was a specialist in the 101st Airborne Charlie Company, active duty from 2008 to 2011, doing one tour in Afghanistan, then did Army Reserve until 2016. He was awarded the Army Achievement Medal during his tour in the Kunar province. We grew up together and have rarely gotten to see each other since he has come home. We do our best to keep in touch, but life is what it is. This man is my brother and the best man I know. Well, thank you, Aaron, for your service.
Thanks, Aaron, for your service.
And Norman for the submission.
Thanks, Norman. Short and sweet. Right yep. to the point there.
Short and sweet.
Cool. Appreciate it, guys. Thanks for your service. Thanks for submitting that. And yeah, submit your own veteran workingclassbowhunter.com/veteran shout out and check out Operation HHA USA. Thank you, guys. Thanks for listening.